Beguiled, Chapter 9, Evil Plans. In a reality beyond the world of heart. In a poorly lit workroom, a bubbling cauldron hung ominously over an open hearth. Tending it were two deviously wicked witches. Together they were plotting revenge against the people of Arcadia and Elysium. If they succeeded, they would have free rein and heart would be under their control. So great was their influence, there was little doubt that this sinister partnership was the most dangerous threat to the peace and stability of heart for hundreds of years. Stirring the cauldron was Princess Callistra, commonly known as the Wicked Witch of Lotions and Potions. Callistra was actually the oldest and ugliest of the two. She was also the most deceitful and two-faced, and was definitely not to be trusted. The younger witch was Queen Draconia, Callistra's equally manipulative, power-hungry daughter. Queen Draconia ruled over a realm known as the Kingdom of Darkness and Despair. For obvious reasons, she was renowned throughout heart as the Dark Queen, and more than anything, she loved power and control. She demanded to be addressed by her royal title, Your Darkness. To get revenge on the world of heart, the two witches had come up with a grand plan to turn a world of happiness into one filled with sadness and misery. To achieve this dream, they were busily concocting a sinister mixture brewed from the tears of bitterness and regret collected from thousands of people. Their plan was that when the people of heart came under their spell, happiness and creativity would be destroyed forever. The world of heart would drown in its own tears of sadness and regret. Now their plans were finally falling into place, and for the two witches, this was a moment well worth celebrating. They smiled at each other with wicked grins of self-satisfaction as they stirred the potion and waited patiently until it began to bubble and hiss. Princess Callistra, as she liked to call herself, had one other reason for seeking revenge. She was seething with jealousy because her daughter had been crowned queen instead of her. The secret coven had ignored her vast experience, and once again she had been overlooked for honours. Despite the gala coronation of her daughter, an event most mothers would be proud of, Princess Callistra felt cheated. In her mind, the ancient and most secret coven of witches had made a big mistake by selecting her daughter to be the Queen of Darkness and Despair. A big mistake, a mistake that would have to be rectified. Callistra vowed that when that day came, she would make all the witches and wizards sorry for their big mistake. On that day, she would finally have the recognition she so rightly deserved. Her sinister plan to control all the chocolate production on heart kept her hopes alive. She had been nurturing it for ages, and her plan was ready to hatch. Standing before the magic mirror in her workroom, she shook with excitement as she saw it all coming to fruition. All her hopes and dreams would soon come true, and she would finally be recognized and rewarded by her peers. After all, the strength and effectiveness of her powerful potions were second to none, even if she did lack the finer social skills required of a true queen. But what were a few trifling airs and graces for a powerful witch like Callistra? Callistra knew in her evil heart that one day soon she would seize the opportunity and all the power and rewards would come her way. That day, her miserable and boastful daughter, Draconia, would have to eat her smug and bitter words of false pride. On that day, all the other witches would have to bow down before her, and she would smile with delight as they grovelled and kissed her feet. What a glorious celebration that would be, and for Princess Callistra, it couldn't come soon enough. As the cauldron hissed and spat, Queen Draconia continued stirring, while Princess Callistra emptied vial after vial of a colourless, odourless substance into the mix. "This will be enough of the sadness potion to poison all of the chocolate exported from Arcadia for the next 3 years," crackled the old witch. "Now that your pirate alliance has begun to disrupt trade, control of the chocolate market will soon come to us, and we can finally realize our plans. All you need now, Your Darkness, is to get this into the chocolate factories and add it 3 drops at a time to every batch of chocolate they produce. Do you have someone trustworthy who can follow instructions and add the correct dose to the chocolate mixture at just the right time?" "Yes, Mother," the cold-hearted Queen of Darkness and Despair replied. "I have just the right person. My pirate allies have recruited the Abbot of Appleton for me. I now have him completely under my control, and he will do anything I ask of him." "Can you trust that bumbling fool to follow your instructions to the letter? Are you sure he will not go prying or interfere? We don't want him getting suspicious. It is still too early to go public with our grand schemes for the future. For the moment, it would be wise to keep him in the dark. He will get to know soon enough." "Relax, Mother. It is all under my control. Soon, every kingdom of the planet Heart will fall under the influence of our sinister spell," reassured the Dark Queen. "The only safe people and safe countries will be those who don't eat chocolate. Before long, every person of every realm of heart will be crying with misery and grief," Draconia sneered. "If my calculations are correct, by the time of the quadruple eclipses, a few years from now, the sounds of wailing, grief and despair will fill the entire world. It will be the most miserable-sounding disharmony made on heart for centuries, and I cannot wait to hear it. It will be music to my ears. What a delightfully chilling thought." "Good. Now all we need to do is to neutralize the 2 most powerful kings of heart and their pompous advisers," Callistra replied. "With their monarchies in complete disarray, we can take control of the governments of both Elysium and Arcadia. Then, the only person who can prevent us from controlling all the trade of heart is the mighty Chan Lu." "Mother, don't worry about the mighty Chan Lu. I have my own plans for him." Beguiled, Chapter 10, More Precious Than Gold. Princess Helen was born to King Harold and Queen Anthea of Arcadia a few years before the massive volcanic eruptions and the ensuing pirate raids began to disrupt daily life. As an infant, Helen was a sensitive child who reacted quickly to the stress and the changing environment around her. By the time of her 6th birthday, life in the palace had seen so many changes, she became sick and almost died. The cause of Princess Helen's sickness was unknown, but seemed to be associated with the ongoing emotional stress of the people at court. To save her, the court physicians insisted she go to live on a more peaceful island to recuperate, and at that time, the most peaceful and successful hospital was located in a secluded valley on one of the outer ring islands of eastern Arcadia. The volcanoes of eastern Arcadia were so ancient they were generally thought to be inactive. There, on an island that was close to the equator, ancient, snow-fed volcanic springs soothed Princess Helen's aching soul, while fresh ocean breezes breathed life and wholeness back to her body. She was almost 12 years old before she fully recovered. By that time, pirates were becoming bolder and more audacious with their raids. Much speculation and uncertainty now surrounded the future of all the perimeter islands. In response, Queen Anthea asked that Princess Helen be brought to the palace of Penn for her safety. She also insisted that the enchanting Lady Nereid be sent for immediately to accompany Princess Helen home to court. The palace was located on the main island of Arcadia, an inner island known as Penn. But no matter how carefully and secretly the trip was planned and carried out, the mission was steeped in danger. Ever since the disruption of the strong magnetic currents, the number of pirates was growing and their attacks had been increasing. By this time, their raids were openly brazen, and they now controlled many of the key trading ports scattered around the outer islands. To complicate matters, navigation through both the southern and northern waters was becoming far too dangerous. The ships would need to take a longer route home, and the more they delayed, the more dangerous it was likely to become. The risk of capture was increasing every month, so there was a sense of growing urgency. Thus it came to pass that two sleek Arcadian ships were escorting a cargo more precious than their weight in gold. They were making their way home, sailing cautiously through waters previously considered safe. In good times, there would have been at least six additional ships to escort Princess Helen and Lady Nereid home to Penn. However, if things had been normal, they would have travelled in complete safety. For this journey, a fleet of four ships had been divided into two groups of two. They were attempting to reach a safe destination without drawing attention to themselves and the fact that Princess Helen and Lady Nereid were aboard. The hulls of Arcadian ships were designed and constructed with sinuously graceful lines. This was partly why they were so sleek and fast. To conserve weight further and to make them as fast as possible, their hulls had been finished with an extra level of care reserved for the most expensive Arcadian ships. A special coating of a glass-like timber resin had been applied below the waterline, which made these ships as slippery as an eel. But as sleek as they were lightly rigged. They carried very little armament, and like all other Arcadian ships, they could sail only along curved paths. The crew detected two pirate ships just after lunch on the same day they set out on the first leg of their homeward voyage. Initially, this did not concern the Arcadian commander. He knew his ships well, and he knew that under normal circumstances, they could easily outrun most foreign ships that plied these waters. But these were not normal circumstances. Neither did the Arcadian commander know that these were not normal pirate ships. The reason, unknown to others, was that Admiral Dunatelia had stacked the odds in his favour and now had two aces up his sleeve. Firstly, the Admiral had Queen Draconia's promise to conjure up bad weather to assist his cause. Arcadian ships were definitely not suited to heavy seas. And secondly, he had obtained drawings of a more advanced ship that showed great promise. Then, using confiscated gold, he had bribed a disgruntled Arcadian shipbuilder to construct a few new prototypes for him to test. The Admiral was delighted by the result and hoped that under his guidance the new designs could be developed further. Even if they didn't have the same navigation systems, the aim was to have ships that were just as fast, if not faster, than the fastest Arcadian vessels. And if he could sail them in straight lines, he knew he could catch them. Besides, he had one other advantage. He was being sponsored by the Dark Queen. And with a little magic in his sails, everything was on the Admiral's side. By mid-afternoon, the winds shifted and the weather mysteriously changed. Initially, the wind began to chop up the calm surface of the Ocean of Dreams, and the seas became confused. As the wind persisted from the same quarter, the swell began to build. And to make matters worse, the pirates appeared to be gaining on them. Had the pirates been tipped off, or was this just another chance raid? If so, by whom? If they had, it now seemed that Arcadian efforts to disguise the nature and purpose of their trip and avoid trouble had been wasted. Beguiled, Chapter 11, A Worsening Situation. An abnormal wind from this direction was an ominous precursor of the drama about to unfold. Large swells were building, and the Arcadian crews had to reef and trim their sails. To save both ships and their lives, they had to find a safe port. But the nearest Arcadian port was the trading port of Appleton, which was also a key port in the mighty Chan Lu's trading network. They would be safe there, they thought. As conditions worsened and evening approached, the ships struggled up mountainous waves. They crashed headlong into one trough after another, each blow bringing them closer to impending doom. Finally, the lead ship was tossed off the crest of a wave so large it seemed to be flying. When the ship came down, it crashed hard into the trough of the wave before it. There were anguished cries from all aboard as the ship plunged headlong into the rolling foam. A bone-chilling crack echoed ominously through the ship as timbers split under the enormous strain. There was a ghostly pause as if the storm had quieted itself for just a moment. In the eerie silence, all aboard could hear their hearts pounding in their ears. It was as if they were beating out the death knell to accompany the ship's coming demise. This ominous sound was accompanied by the sound of water pouring into the hull. In the darkening gloom, it was impossible for the crew to know how much damage the ship had sustained and the condition of the hull below water. To make matters worse, they could not check and make repairs. If the pumps could not hold the water level in the bilges in check, even the least experienced knew the ship was doomed. The captain was cold and showed no outward sign of his grave fears. He knew another wave the size of the last could spear them headlong into one of the uncharted rocky reefs lying close to the surface. And as the tide ebbed, their margin of safety was being diminished. They had taken a risk remaining so close to the outer islands, and they knew it. However, that decision had been made jointly by all the senior officers before the fleet set sail. They all understood the dangers. Regardless of the risks, remaining close to the outer islands was safer than navigating the pirate-infested waters of northern and southern Arcadia. How would they tell the king and queen that the beautiful Princess Helen and the enchanting Lady Nereid had been sold into slavery? Or worse still, explain how Admiral Dunatelia had chased them all afternoon and caught up with them? How embarrassing would that be? And what part did the Admiral's sponsor play in all this? Just what was the Queen of Darkness aiming to achieve? Whatever technical advantages Arcadian ships had, they were more than negated by the raging storm. The ships weren't designed and built for such conditions. When they did encounter bad weather, they headed straight for the nearest downwind port. But as Arcadian ships couldn't sail in a straight line, technically they couldn't exactly run before the wind. To get to a safe port, they needed to get their curved path just right, or they would all end up on the rocks. In the period before the pirate raids, there were lots of safe ports to choose from, but not now. Now, even the slightest change in direction that brought them across the path of the wind and the waves could spell disaster. But if conditions had been normal, they would never have had to consider the course they were taking in the first place. The captain was becoming more and more concerned. He had never encountered such conditions. As the ship took on more and more water, he knew it would wallow, making progress slower and steerage more difficult. Their soaring falcon of the seas was behaving more like a lame duckling. There was almost no chance of outrunning the pirates now, and the ocean was much too rough to risk transferring the passengers to their undamaged escort ship. But that also meant it was too rough to be boarded, so they still had a slight chance of escape. And any chance of survival, however slight, they had no other option than to take it. As the light of the sun faded behind the thickening storm clouds, a thick briny mist was forming and being driven hard by the wind. Salt and foam whipped from the waves stung their exposed skin. The warm tropical air had turned icy, and it was feeling more like sleet and snow by the minute. "Surely there is magic afoot to cause such adverse sailing conditions," the captain thought. Already heavy with water flooding the bilges, forward progress was almost halted. They bobbed like a lead-weighted cork. With the light fading, the ship was virtually crippled. Even if they were able to avoid the pirates, they were in grave peril, and they might not reach port. Princess Helen and Lady Nereid were now in mortal danger.